In terms of Sutrayana, Pungatma Zeme was discussing this question of suspicion in terms of being successful with samsara. A story I always like to relate about this is being at Pema Urseling once with Tachin Rinpoche, and he'd invited Dzongsa Khyentse Rinpoche to come and teach there. And Dzongsa Khyentse Rinpoche agreed to come and teach on the basis that he wouldn't teach, that he would answer questions. And he said that he wanted raw questions, not cooked questions. By a cooked question, he meant, Rinpoche, can you tell me the difference between Dhammakaya, Dhammadhatu, and Dhammata? He said, this is a cooked question. Because it's just a request for teaching, it's not actually a question about your own experience. And so the day arrived, he came, and we were all in the large tent there. I sat on one side of Dzongsa Khyentse Rinpoche, and Tachin Rinpoche sat on the other side. People asked questions, and he'd say, cooked question, and then he got a few questions, but there were quite long gaps between them, and in the end, he looked at me, and he said, do you have a stopwatch on this? And I said, yeah, you just press this. And so I handed it to him, and he said, if there's any longer than 20 seconds between questions, I leave. And then he said, 10 seconds, 5 seconds. And then after a while, he said, you know, most of you are not qualified for samsara, let alone the pursuit of nirvana. And he said, do any of you have jobs? And what he got onto was this question of being successful at samsara. And it was really an extremely important issue because there is this idea of revulsion with samsara. People hear this. You must become revolted with samsara in order to become a Dharma practitioner. And many people seem to misunderstand this as, yes, I'm revolted by samsara because I can't keep my bank balance in credit, I've got a problem with personal hygiene, whatever the issue is, and people don't like me, and I'm always doing the wrong thing, and yes, it's miserable. I want to go and live in a nice Tibetan center where I don't have to deal with anything anymore. This is not revulsion with samsara. When I'm talking about success at samsara, I'm not talking about getting rich. I'm simply talking about having an idea and being able to follow that idea through. So I want to learn a language, so I learn a language. I take a class to learn to do something, I do it. I get a job, I fulfill the role of the job, and etc. I'm not always getting the sack because I'm useless. Now, the interesting thing is that in order to be successful at samsara, you need desire. And your desire has to be sufficient to going after what you want and getting it, putting the work in to get what you want. Then you get what you want, and then you experience samsara. Until you're able to get what you want and go after it and obtain it, you don't know what samsara is. Because that point where you get what you want is extremely interesting. There's nothing wrong with it. It's actually quite delightful. But then when you have what you want and you're sitting there with it, thinking, this is a jolly nice thing, there's a certain strange edginess about that, which is, how long can I sit here and admire it? Now, from a Sutrayana perspective, we would say that is because this thing, that I desired so much does not have the capacity to satisfy me, that things of the world are hollow and worthless. This is not actually true. You know? Things are pretty neat, I think, things of the world. I love them. more. I can take any. My one remaining root teacher, Khunzang Dorje Rinpoche, was asked last time in Nepal if he would like anything from the West that we could bring back for him. He said, "Don't ask me what I want. I want everything." There's no end to what I want. He said, "But maybe just come and visit me. That will be enough." And the important thing about this from a Vajrayana point of view is that there is nothing wrong with things. That things do contain the capacity to make us happy forever. It is we who get in the way of that process. Because what I want to be doing really is not having what I want, but moving towards it. So that when I get what I want, the discomfort of that situation is that I'm no longer in motion. The process has come to an end. And in that position, although I have, it's a position of emptiness because there's nowhere to go. That is why people do not like to be happy. They like to be moving towards happy. Because happy is useless from the point of view of samsara. So I'm happy. What now? Where do I go? One is not defined by happy. Happy is actually extremely vague. I'm going to be happy very soon is a great thing. I've got the money, I'm going to the shop, or I'm clicking the right thing on eBay or whatever it is, and I'm getting the thing, it's going to arrive, and I'm going to be so happy. This is actually far preferable to when the thing arrives. Oh, it's great when it arrives, but then you unwrap it and there it is, and then what do? You go back to eBay and you look for something else. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. So the suspicion that arises at that point is of a subtle nature. And we begin by saying, I have a problem with things. And by a thing, I mean anything. It could be a situation I desire, a person I desire, status I desire, whatever it is I desire. So we start by saying this whole question of desire is problematic. That if I involve myself with desire, I involve myself with disappointment. There's a word, dukkha. Is everyone familiar with this word? It's usually translated as suffering. But dukkha actually doesn't mean suffering. Suffering is quite a narrow term for dukkha. Khandradecha and I usually translate dukkha as unsatisfactoriness. And that includes everything from the most intense suffering to the very, very, very mildest irritation, that the temperature in the room is not quite right, that it's not quite the right time of day, that something is not as it should be. It's that there could be something better going on somewhere, and maybe this is not it. Like, you could be experiencing this now. Why did I come here? I could have been having fun somewhere else. This was the wrong workshop. Maybe the right workshop is happening somewhere. That's dukkha, yeah. So suspicion then, one's suspicion arises out of accomplishment, of getting what I want. If I never get what I want, I cannot call that disgust with samsara, because I've never really experienced samsara. To really experience samsara, you have to get success with it and realize that something very slight is amiss with it. This is the meaning of precious human rebirth. If the suffering is too intense, there's nothing to question there. Or what one is questioning is simply misery. The important thing about precious human rebirth is a sense of humor, because one has to be open to being amused by one's situation. Well, there it is. I learned French. I went to France. I spoke to people. They understood. What do I do now? Learn regional accents in France? Am I going to take that further? I know I can do that. And I know I was glad when I was learning that it was improving. I was watching myself advancing. I was getting something from that. And then suddenly it came to a stop. So suspicion is crucial here. And we start with renunciation, because we want to see what it's like to be cut off from that. To say, I'm not going to go through that anymore. I'm not going to follow anything. So that is the purpose of renunciation. It manifests in all kinds of different ways, through monasticism, through all kinds of practices. But the principle is cutting off this process of moving towards something. If one is not identifying oneself with that journey toward objective desire, then the object of desire is as delightful as the anticipation. What needs to be understood is what mitigates against that, and that is the referential process of I am moving toward the object of desire. So when I have the object of desire, I can no longer identify with moving towards it, because I have it. And this reflects emptiness. Now, we can move from this to look at what constitutes real enjoyment. Because most of us make our lives miserable because we are unable to enjoy anything. I'll tell you something shocking now. Oh no, it's too late, it's lunchtime. That anything you enjoy, you can enjoy forever. This is the meaning of the wish-fulfilling jewel. What is a wish-fulfilling jewel? Anything. A stone you find on the beach, anything. Whatever you enjoy, you can enjoy forever. If you don't enjoy it forever, if there's anything that you find is not as wonderful as it ever was, what that means is that you're involved with it referentially in some way. And that the reference point gets worn out by habituation. Now, if you simply enjoy something or someone purely, that is, without referentiality being involved, then there's no reason whatsoever that that enjoyment should not be infinitely protracted. So one has to become suspicious when something isn't as wonderful as it ever was. Because you can't wear that out. You can't wear out yellow by looking at it. It's not going to get any less yellow by my looking at it for half an hour, for 3 hours, for the rest of my life. So if I stop enjoying it, why is that? This is a way of looking into Sutrayana, which is informed by Dzogchen, in terms of what the actual mechanism is that's at work there. We're not looking at this from a religious point of view. Referentiality, for those who are unfamiliar with the word, is, we could begin with, but it might be putting Descartes before the horse, I don't know. That's the samsara of having to listen to Nagpacha again. I say stuff like that. I think, therefore, I am. This is referentiality. Referentiality is the therefore. I have this, therefore I am happy. I wear these clothes, therefore people will admire me. Referentiality is always the therefore. And in terms of Sutrayana, we kill the therefore. There is no therefore. We kill the therefore in terms of silent sitting. I let go of thought. I don't think, therefore what? You're not there. There is no therefore. There is an experience in which I do not have to define myself. I am free of having to define myself. So this is referencelessness, which is the reason for silent sitting. You can start actually appreciating the sense fields simply for what they contain. You don't have to possess them or not possess them. I'll talk a little bit more about this after lunch in terms of this quality of appreciation, because we're going to go into looking at Tantra. We've now come to the end of my little discourse on Sutra. We'll, in the afternoon, look into Tantra and look at the nature of appreciation and what that is, because this is really crucial in terms of Tantra and in terms of understanding the difference between renunciation and transformation, in terms of what transformation means at a perceptual level.